All right, continuing along in our agenda, under staff reports and administration department, we have the Nova Scotia Fire Services Governance Study, and Tom McEwen, our CAO, will be leading us in the discussion, and we also have Chris Kennedy in the room and other senior members of staff should questions or comments arise.
Thank you, Chair. So this is a presentation, and we're using the information that's presently available to us as it relates to the Nova Scotia Fire Services Governance Study. There's likely to be more questions than we can answer because the government has not provided us with all of the information which would be necessary to really do a thorough and complete review of the information. I would like to say this is not an initiative of the municipality of the District of Lunenburg. This is an initiative of the province. It started in April 4th, 2025, with the Fire Service Association of Nova Scotia issuing an RFP for the conduct of a governance review for fire prevention, and it rolled from there. So, Tina, if you could move forward. The study proposed the modernization of fire services governance to improve coordination, sustainability, and effectiveness. It addresses legislative gaps, training challenges, and inconsistent service delivery and funding pressures. These are issues that we agree should be reviewed. So we don't disagree that this should be looked at with an eye to find solutions, but we question the way the province has decided to move it forward and that some of the recommendations that we see in the material and some of the implications that we see. So the study was initiated due to increasing complexity in emergency response, aging infrastructure, growing expectations for standardized fire competency across the province. Next slide, please. So some key recommendations. And again, we don't necessarily take issue with the recommendations that came out of the fire services review, but we do question some of the ways the province has indicated that they implement them. I will say from the very beginning, this appears to be an urbanization of a rural fire service. And that's what we see as being primarily most problematic. For towns, they already have fire departments as part of their unit. We do not. Rural municipalities have a separation between the municipality and the fire service, and it's laid out in the MGA that fire services register with the municipality for the provision of fire service. The registration allows us to fund fire services, but they are not an agent of the municipality. We do not exercise control. We may have some level of influence or some advocacy roles we can play, but there's a clear separation and distinction between the autonomous fire departments and the municipality. That will change if the province moves forward with this in the way that they've suggested. So some of the key recommendations, and again, we don't necessarily disagree with the recommendations. It's how it's going about implementing it. So the creation of a unified fire services act to replace the fragmented governance. So Bill 158 has already been introduced in the province, which calls for the establishment of a new legislative framework to be put in place before the legislature by September 2026. So the fire services study starts in April with an RFP 2025. Bill 158 is introduced in October 2025. And the goal, as stated in the bill, and I'll read from it just so there's no confusion. It's under Section 4. The Minister of Municipal Affairs shall introduce a bill in the House of Assembly before September 30th, 2026, implementing the legislative framework developed under Section 2 of the Act. Section 2 of the Act is the Minister of Municipal Affairs and the Minister of Emergency Management shall develop a legislative framework for fire safety, fire services, fire training, and fire certification matters in response to the recommendations from the 2025 Value for Money Audit for the Nova Scotia Firefighter School, The recommendations from the interim report of the Governance Review of Fire and Associated Services throughout the province, requested by the Fire Service Association of Nova Scotia, and information and feedback received from communities, fire stakeholders, and members of the public through the public consultation process. So the turnaround is quick. You have an RFP issued in April of 2025, and the province by legislation has a mandated framework to be put in place by September 2026. And in the interim period, the public consultation is intended to take place that will inform all of the decisions. So with that background, that's the Fire Services Act. Then the appointment of a Nova Scotia Fire Commissioner to oversee the standards and coordination, development of province-wide training standards and a provincial fire training system, standardized dispatch aligned with NG911 and NFPA 1225, enhanced mental health, cancer prevention, and WC protections for firefighters, sustainable funding models, reducing dependence on fundraising, and provincial recruitment and retention initiatives. These recommendations generally are all things municipalities across the province can support. They will improve fire services in Nova Scotia, but again, they don't necessarily have to be implemented in the manner in which the province is suggesting. Next slide, please. Here's where things start to become a little more challenging. So implications for volunteer departments. Possible shift from independent society governance to more standardized provincial oversight. Higher minimum standards for training, operations, and equipment. Potential reduction in administrative burden as standardized systems are introduced. Improved access to mental health and safety supports, changes in funding formulas, which may reduce reliance on community fundraising but increase reporting requirements, and transition toward unified dispatch, which may require equipment or communication upgrades. Next slide, please. Next steps. Review the detailed recommendations with municipal leadership. Begin internal assessment of departmental readiness for new training and governance requirements. Participate in upcoming provincial consultation sessions. Identify equipment or system upgrades needed for alignment with standardized dispatch and develop communication materials for membership and community stakeholders. So again, this is information that was provided to the province. And when you read over, as we just did, this initial section, it doesn't seem like the sky is falling. It actually seems like these are initiatives which would make sense and which would improve the fire services. But as we continue to review the material, we'll identify some of the problems that we foresee. So I'm going to skip over these questions. These are there was a forum held by the province. They invited a bunch of stakeholders, and these were table questions from consultation meetings. We've included them in the material so that you'd have them if you want to see them. But I'm not going to spend the time reviewing them. But if you want, this material is available in our agenda. You can get it online. You can review the table questions on your own and look at the questions that were asked, and then see how you would respond. So if you could just go ahead. So these are the fire service transitions. So these are, again, this is material that was provided to us from the province, and we can see what they're saying, and we can identify potential issues. So what I'll do now is review. On the left, you see the different headings. The current state, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time reviewing because you're familiar with that, but the future state and the transition needs are where we really have to put our attention. So the current state under governance and legislation, so there's multiple acts govern the fire services. So some fire departments exist under the Rural District Fire Act with the commissions. Some are created by their own legislation, and some are societies. So there are many ways in which the fire services are governed. Many volunteer departments are self-governed. And again, that is the system that is intentionally put in place under the MGA, in that fire departments are not agents of the municipalities. There's no consistent oversight, no mandatory risk profiles. So the consistent oversight would be dependent upon how the nature of the incorporation. So under the Societies Act, it lays out how it's governed. Under the Rural Fire Commission, the Rural Fire District Act, it lays it out. And if there's independent legislation, it lays it out. But they're not consistent in the sense that there's no framework that applies to all fire departments in the same way. The future state, this is the one which gets a little challenging. Oversight by the province, municipally led fire services, creation of a new provincial fire commissioner. So the fire commissioner isn't necessarily a bad idea. We just don't know enough about it. Oversight by the province. There's a lot of talk in here about standardization and a provincial legislation that will modernize fire service. The difference here is municipally led fire services. And what does that mean?
That's what they're working on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So for anyone that we'll just take a minute or two. Sometimes the system just needs to be restarted. So if you could just we'll hold tight for a minute or two. We'll try to get an update on that, and we'll return in just a second.
It is recorded, though, right?
It is recording.
Yeah, we do record.
Okay.
So we can.
Yeah.
We're having issues with our audio from the live stream. So sound is working fine in here. It appears to be working fine on Teams. We're trying the tried and tested IT solution of turning off and turning on again, and we're going to see if that does anything. Yeah. Okay, why are you doing that?
And for those in the gallery, even if there is disruption to our live stream, it will still record, and people can watch it later by clicking the link. So we haven't lost anything that was presented, but we will try to get the live stream up and running, especially as we know there's several people trying to watch online.
Yeah, okay. I'm hoping that I will then hear myself again, and that will mean that it's fixed. Yep. I have the feed up with the volume on, so I should hear if it's fixed. I'm not hearing anything right now. All right, it appears we've resolved the stream issue, so we're just going to do some final resets, and then we'll we're going to start on the governance issue, Tom? Okay.
Okay, after that brief technical issue, we're going to start back up with a review of the fire services transition. Again, this is a document that was provided by the province. The plan outlines a transition for Nova Scotia Fire Services from a self-governed state to a provincially overseen model. It covers key areas including governance, community risk, service levels, administration, and fundraising. So starting with governance, which is on the left, the current state, the Municipal Act governs fire services. Many volunteer fire departments are self-governed, and there's just no consistent oversight, no mandatory risk profiles. Again, in the current state, the fire departments exist generally as their own societies under the Rural Fire District Act or virtue of their own individual legislation. Each piece of legislation, the Societies Act, the Rural District Fire Act, or the Act of Incorporation for a fire department, they set out the governance structure. So there's not that there's no governance structure in place. It's just inconsistent because it's dependent upon the nature of the incorporation. So the future state, oversight by the province and municipally led fire services. There would also be the creation of the new provincial fire commissioner if that recommendation was followed through. So oversight by the province is the consolidated provincial legislation for fire services. Again, not suggesting that this in and of itself is a bad idea. The regulations would be established and oversight provided by the province. The proof will be in the legislation itself. So until we see what's being proposed, it's really hard to offer comment on it. And the regulations would be what puts the act into motion. And until we see those, again, it's challenging to see what the regulations might look like. The second bullet under the future state, municipally led fire services. So that is a significant change in how fire services are currently provided. As I indicated earlier, a concern of rural municipalities is that they are moving urban firefighting and the governance structure, which generally has a fire department as a department of a town, transition into a rural municipality where we have the absolute separation between the municipality and the fire departments because the MGA specifically states that fire departments are not agents of the municipality. And so a municipally led fire service would seem to suggest that there's going to be a change in how that happens. And as we go through more of these points, we can see additional challenges. So what does municipally led fire service mean? And again, it's some guesswork on our part because it's not really fleshed out a whole lot. But it appears that municipalities will effectively control fire departments. And that level of control currently doesn't exist and hasn't existed in rural fire departments servicing rural municipalities at any time. There has always been the independence of the fire departments. They are not departments of the municipality. They are not employed by the municipality. They are funded by the municipality upon registration for the service, and the registration is the decision of the fire departments on what services they are going to provide. The municipality doesn't make those decisions. The fire department does. And we work with the fire departments to try to make sure that things like...
Is it broken? Something wrong with your mic. So. We're going to switch mics.
When did we find out that happened? Oh, my Lord. So, this doesn't normally happen. To me, anyway. I'll pick up from where I left off. So some of our concerns is it appears the new act would require municipal councils to authorize the establishment and operation of fire departments. That's a role council hasn't has not had to do because of the absolute separation. Municipal councils to appoint fire chiefs, not a role municipal council has done. That has been the role of the fire departments, regardless of how they're organized. It's been an autonomous decision by the fire departments to appoint their chief and officers. Fire chiefs to be accountable to council for delivery of services and report annually on performance indicators. Again, this isn't a function that's currently in place, and there's no real mechanism for it to take place easily without a whole-scale switch to the system. What this might mean to the municipalities, CAOs, or municipalities to take the lead for delivery of fire services, and council via the CAO will gain direct authority over fire departments. Now, it's been suggested that FSANS has requested these changes. In discussions that have taken place with rural fire departments, we question whether that message is accurate, because what we hear from rural fire departments is the recommendations under the study, which we reviewed earlier, those can be supported. The change that's proposed here with the whole-scale switch from an independent volunteer fire service to a municipally run fire department where the fire chief is appointed by council isn't something that was specifically asked for. And when we look at how the engagement took place, it looks like it was done in such a way that rural fire departments, and in particular rural fire chiefs and officers, would have been challenged to get to the meetings to make their voice heard. So on the fire governance and legislation, we see significant issues. If we look at the fire leadership and administration, so now we have the, I'm going to skip over community risk profile and level of service for now. The current system, you have an elected fire chief, the fire departments hold their own liability insurance, and you're responsible for your own financials. Generally, the fire departments tell us what their area rate needs to be, and we collect it and pass that information along. There's provision, depending upon how you're incorporated, for area rate meetings where the budget is presented to residents so they can vote on it. But the system is fairly clear. The future state is municipally approved fire chief, municipal support for finance, OHS, fleet and facilities, shared budget process, new opportunities for regional collaboration. So again, some of these changes we think could result in significant challenges. The appointment of the fire chief, depending on how that takes place and what qualifications are required for a fire chief, which one would hope would be in the legislation, can be a challenge. What level of support by the municipalities for finance, OHS, fleet, and facility management is unclear. But fire departments can operate differently than municipalities right now. It's expected that if we have to provide finance, OHS, fleet, and facility support, the financial reporter requirement is going to jump way up. So under the legislation as it currently stands, under the MGA, you don't have fire departments through the MGA do not have to do the same financial reporting under the Financial Services Act as public bodies, like municipalities. That could change. That could elevate the reporting requirements so that you have to do audited financial statements, like we do, each year, or those audited financial statements could end up being consolidated in our financials, which puts a higher level and a higher expectation on how they spend money and collect money. The transition need there is legislation by the province highlighting indemnifications, bylaws passed by the municipality confirming appointments and other services. So again, the transition need, because it's legislative-based, requiring the province to pass an act, the province to pass regulations, and municipalities to pass bylaws, makes for a very bureaucratic type of appointment system, financial system, If we have to be responsible for your fleet and facilities, then the level of review would be higher likely than it is. The occupational health and safety requirements would be at the elevated level that municipalities currently operate on. And again, it is such a whole-scale change in the nature of how fire services are delivered in rural Nova Scotia. It will be challenging to implement, and that's without getting into any discussion on the cost. So when we look at the possible impacts, and again, these are being presented as possible impacts because we don't have all the information necessary to make meaningful conclusions. But based upon everything that we've been able to read and everything that we've learned, we think that these impacts are reasonable. So once departments are municipally authorized, municipally overseen, and municipally accountable, procurement and staffing decisions will inevitably fall under existing municipal rules. So then you become an extension of the municipality. You're no longer an autonomous fire department. You're part of the municipality and all of the great things that come with that. So that transition of itself is going to be hard to manage. And the impact of the transition on the volunteer base of the fire department is hard to gauge. What this might really mean, chiefs will be responsible for the management of the fire department, but no longer, quote, run their hall, quote, independently. They will report up through the municipal administration just like any other department head. So that is a change in the nature of how your departments operate. And again, it's hard to gauge what impact that is going to have on the volunteer base of your fire departments. If a chief is appointed by council, council will likely expect minimum qualifications, HR compliance, performance reviews, and adherence to municipal directives. So you've gone from a fire chief that's relatively independent, running their department, by virtue of the fact that the department itself has put their faith in the chief, to a whole different system and a whole different reporting structure. Fire departments may lose autonomy in selecting apparatus vendors, turnout gear suppliers, and equipment brands. So if you're subject to the same rules that the municipalities are exposed to, your procurement is the same procurement system that we have to go through. And I can tell you, as a municipality, we pay more for everything. We don't see discounts on anything. The one thing that we can do is try to access standing offers, and there's a couple of those available. But the ability for you to negotiate independently with local suppliers, local mechanics, you know, the good people in the village of New Minas that provide a lot of fire support, that could go away because it has to be procured under a procurement system. And so HR policies. So the suggestion seems to be that our HR policies will extend to all the fire departments and all your volunteers. Those will include discipline, respect of workplace, complaints, codes of conduct, harassment, and I will tell you that the Occupational Health and Safety Act regulations, which we're subject to, have mandatory investigations for workplace harassment complaints. So every complaint has to be investigated. Every investigation comes at a cost, and that has to be borne by some entity. And then occupational health and safety regulations. Not at all suggesting that these pieces of legislation in and of themselves won't provide some benefit, but depending on how it's rolled out, depending on how it's done, it could, one, put an administrative burden on both municipalities and fire departments, and two, it's going to increase costs, which are not costs that are currently being covered. Moving back up to the blue one, community risk. So some departments may have completed a community risk profile, but it's not mandatory currently. Under the future state, all departments begin using risk assessment model to determine level of service in coordination with the municipality. And the transition needs that the province set standards for municipalities to use community risk profiles to determine service levels and standards. Again, it's a bit hard to suggest how this might play out. But what we think is under the new governance model, each municipality would complete and maintain a formal community risk assessment to determine appropriate levels of service. Rural fire departments would no longer rely upon traditional or informal judgment to define capabilities. Documented community risk will determine level of service, and rural fire departments will need to provide data to feed the risk model. Many rural fire departments today do not maintain easily accessible and detailed operational data, such as response times, staffing, and day-to-day time of day availability, apparatus capabilities, water supply locations, or station coverages. Risk assessment process requires accurate data to be submitted and maintained. So this is adopting, as it relates to community risk profiles and level of service, a lot of information that we don't currently collect, don't currently record, and we don't currently share. So all of those mechanisms would have to be created and put in place so that we can meaningfully assess the risk to determine the standard of service. And that may mean a lot to some departments. Depending on where your department is located, the nature of the area that you serve could impact service. So instead of the departments, as they currently do, telling the municipality, these are the services that we will register for, the community risk profile and the standards determined through that with respect to the level of service will determine the levels, and that's what you would be registered for, and that's what will have to be maintained. And the department will be tasked with making sure that they have everything that they need to make that a reality, and the municipality in a lot of ways is going to have to find the money to make that happen. So service levels will be anchored to documented risk, including population, identified risks, fire flow requirements, call types, hazards, road networks, access issues, and local vulnerabilities. This means rural departments will need better call reporting, consistent use of RMS and dispatch data, documented training records, updated apparatus, and equipment inventories. So it's not to say that community risk profiles don't serve a purpose. We just question whether the community risk profiles and the level of service could be achieved in a way different than what is being proposed by transitioning the fire service to the municipalities. And related to the level of service, so the current state's determined by a fire department, little to no data behind chosen level of service. Now, the fire departments register knowing what they can do. They know the service they can provide. That's what they register with the municipality for. Under the future state, that's going to be determined by risk with clear correlation and coordination with the municipality. Not necessarily it's a bad idea, but the whole-scale change in the system, we question whether that's the best way to go about achieving this result. And the transition need is a tool provided by the province that suggests level of service, service levels in alignment with risk profile. Don't know what that tool is going to look like. We have a sense of what it might look like, but we haven't seen it. They've introduced tools in other places like coastal protection, and then it's challenging to get the information or the documents that they rely upon to create the tool or even get them to share the tool. So we just don't know enough about what that tool and the level of service. But in the context of this whole-scale change, we again question whether you have to go all the way to a municipally-led fire service to achieve these results. So the level of service, risk, service level, and required resources, municipalities in consultation with community, not necessarily just departments, will determine which services and levels are provided. Structural, offensive, defensive, suppression, motor vehicle, rescue, hazmat, wildlife support. Possible cost recovery model for medical response and support of VHS. Possible new coordination with DNR on wildfires and urban interface incidents. Because the level of service is now tied to risk, and risk belongs to municipalities, fire departments will need to follow municipal policy for service level adoption, long-term capital planning, training standards, staffing expectations, procurement processes, etc. And so what this may really mean, need for quantitative data on risk assessment, levels of service will not solely be set by the fire departments anymore. For some rural departments, this may reduce official service levels if risks, staffing, or training support or training cannot support higher levels. Risk will be assessed across current district boundaries, and some regionalization could be considered to avoid duplication. For others, it may increase expectations and require compliance with provincial standards, and the province has indicated that provision of mutual aid will require the same or higher level of service, i.e., a department cannot provide mutual aid to a department that provides a higher level of service, which is significant. So, if you have a, for instance, in Osprey Village, we have probably the only large-scale buildings in the whole municipality. If the level of risk here determines the level of service by the fire departments that support it, and that level of service is higher than the majority of services provided outside of Osprey Village, where there are no big buildings, mostly residential, some farm structures and things, that'll mean that the mutual aid that's provided to the higher level service departments can only be provided by other departments servicing at the same level of service. So you're going to cut out most of the rural fire departments that have a level of service below an urban state. So what does that do to the mutual aid system? Who backs up those departments? In the absence of a collective, something like 24 fire departments, if you reduce the mutual aid component to the biggest departments serving the higher level of service to two, it's effectively just mutual aid is gone. Automatic aid's challenging because there still has to be somebody to service the rest of the areas. And again, it's the ideas aren't necessarily bad. We just question the way that the implementation is being proposed and whether they have thought out how this really impacts rural fire departments. Next slide, please. When I originally went through this, it didn't seem to take so long. So in the response times and capacities are determined by fire departments. That's the current state. There's gaps in the response data, but that currently is what we're doing is what's taking place now. The future state, using real-time data and NFPA standards for guidance, standard of coverage outlines number of responders and response based upon municipal demand zones. Again, not a bad idea to have real-time data that tells you traffic routes, travel time, so that you can get a real sense of how far you can get in 8 minutes. Right? That is good data to have. The transition needs. Records management system tied directly into dispatch. Data includes call types, dispatch time, shoot times, and travel time. So this in and of itself is not a bad idea, and it's probably something that should be done. And with GIS capabilities as they are now, this is information that could really help fire departments. So the impact response. Dispatch will become modernized, centralized, and consistent to the recognized NFPA 1225 standards. A province-wide system replaces local dispatch arrangements. You can have an opinion one way or the other on that one. But that in and of itself doesn't seem terribly, it's more in line, I think, with a reasonable transition than the whole-scale change of the system. What this may really mean, dispatch will be improved and designed around computer-assisted dispatch-based systems. Local dispatchers, volunteer or part-time, may be eliminated with potential loss and flexibility and local knowledge. The loss of local knowledge is important. It shouldn't be overstated that it is important that people that know the area have some input on dispatch. It's not, there's lots of streets that have names that are very similar or identical, and it takes some level of knowledge to be able to determine which is which. So the loss of the local knowledge is something that should be taken into account. Dispatch protocols may be determined by fire department's ability to respond rather than a simple district call. Who is nearest and capable to respond despite district boundaries? That in and of itself is not a problem. But if you go back to the discussion we just had on the level of service, and you have two different departments with level of service, the nearest department may not be able to respond because of the level of service requirements. Some rural departments will see this as a loss of control, because it is. The volunteer firefighter recruitment and retention. The current state, recruitment campaigns conducted by fire departments, staffing numbers are determined by fire departments, firefighters conduct responses and day-to-day operations. The future state, municipal human resources support. Firefighters would be under the municipal regional umbrella. Firefighters conduct responses and day-to-day operations. No changes of significance. So the municipal human resources support, in and of itself, would be, I think, a benefit to firefighters. Firefighters being under the municipal or regional umbrella, not quite sure what that means. Firefighters conduct responses and day-to-day operations. That will at least continue. The transition need, clear interpretation of OHS, what applies there for fire services, support with larger campaigns for recruitment and retention. The impacts. Rural fire departments have been the hardest hit by declining volunteer numbers and aging rosters. A province-wide strategy to include coordinated recruitment campaigns, consistent volunteer compensation models, potential tax credits and honorariums, retirement and long service incentives, employer partnership programs supporting daytime responses. All of those types of initiatives to assist rural and rural fire departments in getting volunteers would be welcome. These steps help rural departments attract new members and retain experienced ones. What this really may mean. Overall, very positive for the volunteer base. Increases in fire department resource, HR management, recruitment campaigns, community outreach. So this is put forward as a very positive, but in the context of the overall change, where you have municipally led fire services with council appointing chiefs, it's still hard to see what impact that whole-scale change will have on the willingness of volunteers to step up and serve in a non-autonomous fire department anymore. It's not autonomous. It's a municipally led. So it's an extension of the municipality. And some volunteers may not be comfortable or even want to take on that role. The infrastructure. So fundraising and mostly purchased by local fire departments, boot drives, and 50-50 money. The future state funded and supported by municipal budgets. One of the things in the fire governance study was a clear identification that fire departments needed more stable and sustainable funding. That's true. It's always going to remain true. The question, again, is just how do you make it? And I think that there's ways that this could be done which would continue to allow fire departments to be autonomous and raise money in a way that they similarly do. One of the challenges, and we see it periodically, is a fire department takes an area rate to the public, and oftentimes it gets passed. Sometimes it doesn't. Well, there's ways that you could arrange that kind of funding to be put in place by informing the public rather than trying to get the public to vote in favor of it. It doesn't have to come all the way to the municipality to be municipally led. There are transitions and stages and phases that you could go through to make it easier for the fire department to determine what area rate it needs to provide the level of service that it thinks it can provide, and have a way for municipalities to collect that. And then you could look at how the public is engaged in ways from inform to decide, and have a discussion, a meaningful discussion on how that takes place. The funded and supported by the municipal budget, we do budget for it. We include the area rates in our budget. We collect it. We provide it back out. We provide additional grants. And then the transition needs funding grant opportunities from province to offset initial costs for departments. Everyone would have seen that the province has got a $1.4 billion budget, or a billion-dollar deficit. They're cutting back everywhere. This would be a significant cost item that the province should cover in the transition. And we question whether the province has the financial means to do it. As an aside, the province is currently undertaking a fire services review, an RCMP services review, a REMO review, ground search and rescue review, and EHS, all at the same time. And there's no way that that's all cost neutral. It's inconceivable how they could, on the one hand, tell departments to reduce budgets by 10% and do a hiring freeze because we have a $1.4 billion deficit, and then look at all these initiatives that are all high-cost items and think that they can do it in the current fiscal reality that Nova Scotia finds itself in. They haven't just bitten off one big-ticket item. They've bitten off a handful. And municipalities are going to have to carry the burden of implementing a lot of these things. So the impacts on infrastructure. Funding will be more stable, but also more scrutinized. Funding models aim to reduce fundraising reliance. What this really means, departments may receive more predictable funding, but they will be accountable for how those funds are spent. Councils may question issues affecting budget and risk, such as equipment purchases, training expenses, apparatus replacement, and financial transparency becomes mandatory, not optional. So your books are going to be as open as ours are, with all of the scrutiny and all of the oversight at an audit level. And audits aren't free. They're not even cheap. And they catch, they're intended to make sure that the financial statements meet all the generally accepted accounting principles, which, honestly, fire departments, it's probably over what fire departments need. You're currently not subject to the Financial Services Act as public bodies because the MGA says you're not. But this whole-scale change, again, the level of bureaucracy that will be added on the accounting side, not to speak negatively about the accountants in the room, but it's high. And it's going to be a different way than it's been done in the past. Professional standards and training. Current state is defined by fire department. No standard for training. It's no standard of training regulated by the province. Future state shall meet minimum Nova Scotia training standards that are supported and aligned to NFPA and Nova Scotia OHS and other related standards. The transition need, clear regulations on training, clear authority for having jurisdiction for training and certification. So what we see the impact of this, province-wide NFPA-aligned standards to be adopted, regional training facilities and programs to be set up. What this really may mean, NFPA-aligned qualifications become the expectations, not nice to have. Every firefighter will eventually need to complete standardized training to the level of service assigned. Additional time requirement of volunteers for training. Grandfathering could ease the transition, but over time, firefighters unable or unwilling to meet the standard will have to step back, and this will impact the fire department level of service. This may shrink the pool of available volunteers in some communities, at least temporarily, and raises the importance of recruitment and retention. So no one's suggesting that standardized training isn't a good idea. But there has to be a recognition and acknowledgement that for a volunteer to take their time to go through standardized training and maintain that training, particularly if they want to work their way through the department and go up to the rank of officer, is a huge undertaking. And how are they going to do that? And if they don't have time to do it, or they can't do it on the timeline that's prescribed in the legislation, the solution may be that they're just removed from the volunteer fire department. And then we go from a situation where we don't have enough volunteers to we want to overwork the volunteers that we have, and if they can't bring themselves into alignment, you show them the door. Like, that's not going to increase morale. If anything, it's going to make it more challenging for fire departments to recruit volunteers. And so what does that do to the basic underlying principle that we have a volunteer fire department? It moves it towards requiring some kind of either paid or hybrid system where there's more compensation provided. So the next question is, where does that money come from? And there's no easy solution to that one. The next one is apparatus. Oh my God, there's a lot of these.
Do you need five?
No, that's going to keep going. Apparatus and equipment. Current state. Maintained and purchased mainly by fire department. Record keeping and policies on maintenance limited to critical items. Future state. Aligned directly with the level of service. Shall meet all legislative requirements, including OHS purchasing support with municipality. Transition needs, ownership, and equipment sharing possibilities. So the impact. Aligned to identify risk and level of service. Aligned to NFPA standards. Opportunity for long-term planning and bulk purchasing. What this may really mean, fire departments may lose autonomy in selecting apparatus vendors, turnout gear suppliers, and equipment brands. Municipal purchasing policies, like multiple quotes, tendering thresholds, approved vendor lists will apply. Need for improved record keeping, maintenance certifications, etc., which may increase administrative load. Now, the NFPA standards, because those generally are more urban-based, city-based, they may have vehicle requirement standards that don't easily translate into a rural municipality. They may make good working equipment unusable because they don't meet the standard of the NFPA, which, again, is not designed for a rural municipality. So does that mean that you may have to get rid of equipment that is otherwise, it's in good working order, but it's old? And if that's the case, how do you replace that? Where does that money come from? And what do you do with the old one? Because no one in Nova Scotia will be able to use it. Like, there's just, it leads to so many questions about how this transition can make sense in a way that doesn't completely undercut the volunteer basis of the fire department and its current ability to use equipment to the end of life, as opposed to some standard that's been set. Next one. Good news. Looks like there's just two more. So the current state. So this is firefighter health, safety, and wellness. Now, the current state, department specific. The responsibility of the department to host programs for firefighters. Future state. I didn't write this. The province did. Responsibility of municipality to take care of their employees. There seems to be a stated indication that firefighters are going to become employees of the municipality, which terrifies me as a CAO. I'll tell you that right now. Meets or exceeds OHS legislative requirements. So we have, I think, somewhere around 540 volunteer firefighters. If every one of your volunteer firefighters are deemed to be an employee of the municipality for something other than workers' compensation, which is in place right now, that's going to have a whole host of requirements. Because if you, as a volunteer firefighter, are an employee of the municipality, one, I have to pay you. Two, you're subject to all of our policies. And how are we going to govern that? We have maybe 80 staff in our municipality. So you're going to increase it by 540 and tell us we have to manage that. Currently, we don't have a department that you would fit in. We have engineering, but we don't have public works because we don't even own a dump truck. And now we're going to be employing firefighters, being responsible for your facilities and being responsible for your equipment. And if your facility doesn't meet the safety requirements of an NFPA standard, we could have to close it. Well, then we have to build a new one. And who's going to pay for that? It's the slim edge of the wedge, and it's just setting us up. And this is as a CAO, my perspective, and I've shared this with the province, and then I was taken aside and told not to speak. But it becomes a state where it doesn't look like anyone with any level of background in rural municipalities was offered a view or given a chance to offer the opinion. Because for a town with typically one fire department, unless you're Halifax or Cape Breton, it's manageable. All of this is likely manageable. But when you take a rural municipality with 24 departments and 540 employees, 540 volunteers, I think King's may be larger with the number of volunteer fire departments. But between us, I suspect that there's over 1,000 volunteer firefighters, and the bulk of the rural fire departments. And the impact that this could have on our financial well-being is amazing. And to suggest that it's the responsibility of the municipality to take care of their employees. So I'm not sure how long I've been speaking, but that's the first time that they've put employees in the context of firefighters. It doesn't show up above it. They allude to it. They suggest it. You can infer it from what they say. But here they say, take care of your employees. And then the transition needs provincial grant programs for mental health training and initiatives. Well, I can tell you there's a lot more transition needs than a provincial grant for mental health training and wellness. These reforms directly address longstanding rural challenges such as aging PPE, lack of cancer prevention and screening resources, facility environmental issues, insurances, and gaps in EAP and mental health. Rural departments will gain provincial-wide PPE standards, support for gear cleaning and decontamination, clear OHS coverage for volunteers, WCB improvements, prevent financial hardship, and access to standardized cancer screening. All good. All of those individual elements are good. What this may really mean to municipalities will need to ensure adequate funding for these standards through the fire tax rates. Departments may need written safety programs, training documentation, apparatus driver certification, PPE compliance with NFPA 1851, workplace inspections, incident reporting protocols, the WCB and timelines, claim management, fire station, and incident scenes may be required to comply with OHS regulations. My biggest concern is the suggestion that the volunteer firefighters are classified as municipal employees. And then sustainable fire service funding. So fundraising for capital and operations fire services sets the area rates. Future state. Council approves a capital and operating budget aligned with approved level of service being provided. Municipal capital and budget reserves are used. Fundraising can be used for non-essential equipment in coordination with municipalities. The transition is municipalities fund municipally led fire services. So it's not that the residents of the municipality don't currently already provide financial support to fire departments. It's just done through an area rate that's set by individual departments or rural fire services commissions. But we can't lose sight of the fact, and councillors often say it, there's one taxpayer. And they pay provincial tax, they pay federal tax, they pay municipal tax, and that municipal tax rate can include an area rate. And they can only spend and they can only afford so much. So every time a standard is changed, which requires an increased level of spending, we have to go to that same resident and collect the money from them. And there's going to be a breaking point. They don't specifically come out and say it in here, but the costs of what it's going to take to make all of these changes and transitions with apparently fairly limited support from the province, especially when it comes to finances, is going to be a challenge. It's going to be a challenge to the municipality. It's going to be a challenge to the resident on their tax rate. It's going to be a challenge to the fire departments and the way they operate. It's going to be a challenge to firefighters as volunteers and whether they're willing to embrace this whole-scale change. And again, we just question whether the firefighters in rural Nova Scotia, who are FSANS members, have had enough opportunity to make FSANS aware of their views about how this proposed change could impact their departments. Because this is as much about rural fire departments as it is about rural municipalities. But we're in it together. If this change comes through in the nature of the way it's suggested, the municipality has to adjust, fire departments have to adjust, and we have to adjust to a provincially mandated system that sets your obligations and ours. And again, we just question whether this is the right way forward. We're not suggesting change isn't necessary. We're not suggesting that there isn't a lot of opportunity to improve in a whole host of areas. We just question whether this is the proper way to go about it. So the impacts on the sustainable future. The report acknowledges that rural departments cannot rely on bingos, ticket sales, and pancake breakfasts. No one is suggesting that volunteer firefighters should be having to spend as much time as they're required on fundraising. Key improvements include new cost recovery models, updates to fire levies for Crown and Resource land, inclusion of maintenance funding and capital grants, province-supported insurance models, grant funding for risk assessments and strategic planning. This reduces the burden on volunteers and helps stabilize operating budgets. Those are things that municipalities could generally get behind. What this may mean, fire departments may have less control over purchasing equipment, may standardize apparatus and equipment to allow for bulk purchasing, and municipalities are not allowed to fundraise, so there may be need to have a separate fundraising body for special fire department needs outside of the approved budgets. Which, again, isn't unheard of, that you have auxiliary societies that assist in raising money for fire departments. But it's the whole scale change that we question, and we really question whether the views of the rural fire services have been heard by FSANS, and whether what FSANS is reporting to the province really represents the views of the rural fire service. In response to questions that have been asked, municipalities generally have been told that this is what fire services want. This whole thing, the whole package. And when we ask about where is this coming from, they go back to the governance study. Well, the governance study has some 40 recommendations, but it doesn't go this far. And so if it is the case that FSANS has told the province that this package, this slate of changes, is what's needed, then we think it's incumbent upon the Rural Fire Service to either correct the FSANS leadership, if that's who's made this decision, or if you agree, let us know, because we don't believe that this represents your best interests. We don't believe that this transition necessarily aligns with the recommendations in the governance study, and we don't believe it's the best way to do it. But it's really driven by the fire services governance study, and so our ask is for the fire departments and the volunteer firefighters, the members of those departments, to look at this, review it, and determine if this is the future of the state of firefighting that you want to see in rural Nova Scotia. And if it's not, let your voices be heard. You can contact members of council. You can let Chris know. And you know, we don't have a lot of time to respond. There's this afternoon, 2:30. We're on with the Ministers of Municipal Affairs and Emergency Management, where they're going to present maybe some opportunity for input. to the elected municipal officials in the province and the CAOs. And I believe there's another one Thursday evening. But it's certainly moving through the process at surprisingly quickly for a municipal mandate. And my final comment, because I did get a question, or it was asked, what's happening with the Rural Fire District Act? We don't know. So we've asked. There has been no clear view. But the Act itself at Section 55 does allow for dissolution of commissioners by the minister on 90 days' notice. So on 90 days' notice, the minister can dissolve rural fire commissions, and the assets and the liabilities of those commissions go to the municipality in which they're situated in. And if the liabilities outweigh the assets, then there's an area rate put in place for the area that the fire commission serves to collect that deficit. So that's already in the Act. Again, we don't know what the plan is with rural fire commissions. What we've read through and everything that's in here doesn't seem to suggest there's a place for them. And so if the province is intending to dissolve them, it just takes 90 days' notice. There is a requirement in the notice that there could be objection to the proposal to be filed with in writing with the minister within 60 days of the service of the notice. So there's not an opportunity to appeal, but there's an opportunity to have input. But that issue is specific to rural fire commissions. So, having taken up the majority of your morning, that's where we see from the information that we're able to access what's happening with fire services, or what's potentially happening with fire services in Nova Scotia.
It's a lot to take in. We understand what fire departments might be feeling. We're feeling it as council members. The timing on this and the load of information we're having to digest in such a short time frame. And for those that are in our gallery today and are listening, this recording and Tom's presentation can be viewed on our YouTube channel later, and we certainly encourage you to share that with other departments and your colleagues within. And if they're unfamiliar with how to access that, have them reach out to their counselor, and we'll make sure that they are provided with the opportunity to listen. So questions or comments to Tom on the presentation? Is there any at this time? Councillor Brooks, then Councillor Smith.
Thanks, Tom. One of my concerns about this rollout is the gaps that are going to happen, because so much of this is coming without funding. So we're going to have levels set that can't be achieved immediately, to your point about joint services not being able to join a fire call because of that. A lot of that could really extrapolate out into constituents who thought they lived in an area with a level of service, realizing that is no longer going to be the level of service. How is that going to relate to somebody's property value?
So assessment is done by Property Services Valuation Corporation. So whatever provision is in that legislation to impact assessment. But I think the bigger question is, are we going to have departments that have to close because there's level of service that they just can't meet, and their tax base isn't great enough to generate significant revenue or sufficient revenue to support that? Because if the area rate can't support it, then the general tax rate has to support it. And then you get into discussions about, you know, rationalizing of fire departments, which never goes well. And so it's a slippery slope. I don't necessarily think that having service fire service based upon risk assessment and community profiles is bad, but it has to be done in a way that works for both the department and the resident and the municipality. And there's just that level of thought and review just doesn't seem to have happened here.
It's just the city-centric view trying to have an overlay over our community without the money to do that. And this is, just so you folks know, this is so far from the only thing that we get handed down by the province. This is one that touches all of our lives, and we're very, very concerned about it. And I think that's my concern is, yes, there are things that we can address in this to better support our volunteer fire members to ensure that everybody has a level of service and safety providing that service. This is not the right way, and I hope that the conversation is going to continue to illustrate that, you know, we really may end up without some areas being protected. I will not support that.
Councillor Smith.
Thanks for the that comprehensive analysis. It went further into depth on some of the municipal concerns. And I've been talking with fire services in my area about their concerns, and I think a lot of the risks have been well represented, and I really appreciate that being on the record. I did want to put something else on the record. Fire services in my area are speaking up. I think that the point about this being an urbanization of fire services is key, and rural fire services are feeling like they are not seen, they're not understood, and they're not being asked at the ground level that they would appreciate consultation. So this is a statement from Chief Wilson from Cornwall in District Fire Department, and he says, our department operates effectively under the Rural Fire District framework. We are largely self-funded, well-equipped, financially stable, and supported by strong community engagement. From our perspective, we are not a system in need of restructuring. We are deeply concerned that the proposed changes risk removing fire departments from their community-based governance model and shifting toward a more centralized and commercialized structure. In our view, this would undermine recruitment, retention, local accountability, and volunteer engagement, all of which are already challenging in today's environment. Before proceeding with structural changes to local fire services, we respectfully urge the province to address existing systemic pressures that directly impact our operations, including ongoing challenges with EHS, electrical reliability concerns, Nova Scotia Power, and gaps in telecommunications infrastructure. So our fire services have been asking for improvements on cell services for years and not seeing the emphasis on that in this report. These issues place daily strain on fire departments yet remain unresolved. And Chief Wilson signs it, we are not broken and we will not support unnecessary restructuring.
Councillor Moore.
Thank you. I can't believe this is happening. When we first heard this last week or the week before, and then getting this information, the province is, it's unbelievable. They're shoving this down our throat. They're making us look like... A lot of the fire departments aren't going to realize that this is not us initiating this. I know that I have people in the galley there today, and sorry I couldn't be there, but thank you for coming. And we have to speak up. Every municipality, every fire department in Nova Scotia is getting this information, correct?
Councillor
So I'm not sure what information is being provided to fire departments across the province. So the local, the CAOs and senior staff in the region have been working on a presentation to go to all of our councils. So we're sharing similar or identical information, and we're encouraging the that information to go out to our fire departments. But we're not really clear on what's happening outside of the region. But it's primarily a rural municipality. The impact is disproportionate on rural municipalities as opposed to towns.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, we're going to have to, you know, really get up in arms, write letters, and fire departments will have to speak up. This is just unbelievable. I mean, like you said, and thank you for the presentation, there's some things in there that might be a good fit going forward, but this will bankrupt us. And we will not have volunteer fire departments. It's just unbelievable that the province is shoving this down our throat so soon when they only had the study done last year. They do nothing else quick. I mean, and now here they want us to have this, want this in place by September 30th, 2026. It's like unbelievable, unbelievable. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments? Mayor McLean Weil.
I think it is important for councillors to touch base with their fire chiefs in all their departments. And I know we have a lot on our agendas, everyone does, but I think this is really kind of a really key thing that we need to be in touch with our fire departments to know what knowledge they have, and if they don't have knowledge, to make sure that they get a chance to watch this video and get some information about what's happening. I did speak, I've had several conversations with Brian Kaiser at the Fire Services Committee, and to touch base through that with him and the committee, but I think that counselors individually should be in touch with their fire departments to at least find out what knowledge is out there in terms of our own fire departments across the district.
I don't see other question. I don't see any other questions or comments from councilors. But just to kind of bring this back, I'm going to ask Tom, will you kind of outline where we go from here with what we know for those that are in the gallery and listening? We do have a meeting this afternoon, but I think it's important that you know we're sharing what we know with fire departments.
Thank you, Chair. So included in the information is a fire service modernization vision and roadmap. And then you can follow the history of what's happened. And then you see the star, which says we are here. And so implementation planning session held with municipal and fire services leaders. I believe that's what's happening this afternoon. And then we have unified provincial legislation regulations for fire safety services. Transition period begins 12 months notice. So the province is supposed to give 12 months notice to municipalities if they're going to introduce things which could impact us financially. We understand that they're going to give that notice in April 2026, which would allow them to introduce things that will cost us more money in April 2027. The framework is supposed to be established by September. We understand that there's a three-year transition to put it in. So it's fairly advanced at this point. And one of the challenges that we have is the province's position is FSANS asked for this. So FSANS is getting what they want. Our continued question is, did FSANS really want this? Is this really supported by their membership? Is this really supported by rural fire departments? And if it's not, that has to be heard, because that's not the message the province is having right now. So advocacy is our best shot, so we'll we'll listen this afternoon, see what the provinces says, and then go from there.
It just to add to the timeline, I think it would be really useful if counselors could commit over the next 7 to 14 days to check in with their fire departments and then feed that back to me so I have some knowledge of what the status is across the district of what people know or don't know. So at least we have that information and anything else you want to provide. I think that might be helpful for us from an advocacy point of view.
Councillor Smith.
Yeah, is it my understanding as well that Lunenburg Regional will come up with an advocacy or position on this, because that's the collective voice of our departments in the county?
Chris Kennedy, our fire services coordinator, is just coming forward to answer that question.
I can't speak on behalf of them, but I know that they're having a meeting this Thursday night, and that's going to be a topic of discussion. And I'm meeting with the executive prior to that meeting to have a discussion on the same presentation that was given here, because there is concern out there without a doubt. Thank you, Tom, for that very in-depth presentation, and that's kind of where it's at right now. So there are a lot of unknowns and there's a lot of concerns, and up until this point, fire services have been very quiet across the province on this process. And there have been engagement and information has gone out to the departments, but I don't think anybody really had the background or the insight from the presentation that was given here today and some of the things that go along with that. So yeah, I think it's something that definitely needs to be discussed. And hopefully it's not too late to voice opinions, because it's definitely is something that we have to do, both as fire services and as municipalities and as council, because there's huge change there. They had two-hour presentations when they did this engagement process with fire service leaders. Chief and deputy chiefs were asked to come to these two-hour sessions, and you can see from what the presentation was here today that a two-hour session just fairly touches the tip of the iceberg. To get feedback and stuff on this, so it's really important. So that meeting Thursday night is critical. Hopefully all fire service chiefs and members can try to attend that meeting. It's going to be here. I'm going to send an email out after this meeting to try to get more input and get more uptake on the fire services, because the meetings we've had across the county, I think there was 13 out of 23 that approved that actually had, went to these meetings, and it's been like that across the province. So, I'm not sure where the information is derived from that drove this after the study or through the study process, but it's very alarming of where it's at and where it's going. That's just my opinion.
Any other speakers on this topic? While we're concluding this topic today, it's not the last time you'll see it come forward, and we will share and that information as we can. Moving along in our agenda, we have no mayors, deputy mayors, council matters, no added items, no in camera. So we'll conclude our meeting today, and I want to thank again those that came today in our galley to listen to the presentation and those that are following along online. Hope everybody has a great rest of your day.